Well, hi, Mark.
Hi, Tom. How you doing today?
Isn't it a beautiful weather out there?
It is a beautiful day. I'll tell you, I'm ready for spring, summer, whatever is given us.
I was pretending I was you.
You were. Well,
so you got to pretend you're me.
That's pretty difficult.
No, it's very, it's impossible for you to be like me, because you're too nice a person.
I will agree with you there.
Well, now you're not. Okay. We're going to start off with something we did last week, if you'll recall. We started off with criticizing an Episcopalian priestess for talking about spending time with the dying, and she never mentioned Jesus in the whole article.
Can't imagine that, can you? Boy.
Well, what I couldn't imagine is the Post-Dispatch responded to that.
Oh, did they? They responded to your radio program?
Well, they responded to the comments I made.
Oh, really?
Well, let's put it this way.
I haven't seen that.
No, it's actually was by Reverend Cannondale Coleman. He writes that her column of other experiences of comforting the dying, she noted that in her less than 3 years as a priest, she has carried this out countless times. Oh, dear. She rather guilelessly states she had no idea she would be called upon for this sacred ministry, and even has the temerity to shake her finger at her readers and urges that they give it, the dying process, more thought, put their desires in writing, presumably one's funeral plans, to assist the young priest with her anxieties about death. And strangely, in a column by an ordained clergy person, even when she invokes the heavenly banquet to be enjoyed, there is no hope at all in her lengthy piece. Even as we are celebrating the 50 days of Easter, founded on the fact of Jesus' resurrection from the dead, this central Christian belief has no place in what she offers us. All of it is wishful thinking. So, I'm putting this in writing.
Somebody thinks as we do on that.
Yes. Well, I think every Christian should think.
Well, they should.
In fact, that was the point of last week, is you need to have eyes of faith when you read the newspaper, particularly when they're dealing with religious matters.
Absolutely. You got to read with a critical eye. You really do.
In fact, this week they did it again. I think the Post-Dispatch only puts in writings by ordained clergy that never mentioned Jesus. But there was a whole article, like on Mother's Day, and Jesus wasn't mentioned at all by the pastor. And this was a male pastor. So it's really sad. When were you taught, when did it become really clear to you that the cross needs to be the focus of every Bible study, every sermon?
Well, that's just, I can't even remember when that was first impressed upon us at the seminary. I mean, we hear that again and again at conferences when we talk about ministry to the dying. I mean, it's just the Jesus Christ and his cross. You know, I've always felt like there's several things that you need to mention in a sermon.
Yeah.
You need to mention Jesus Christ, his gospel, the empty tomb, the empty Easter tomb, our own resurrection, forgiveness, the cross. I mean, it's just central. I mean, I can't understand sometimes even these Lenten series of sermons that really don't focus on the cross. To me, that's what Lent is all about.
Yeah.
In fact, every sermon, every Christian sermon ought to focus on Christ and his cross and the empty tomb. You ought to have those mentioned every time.
The other two things I bring in is baptism, the Lord's Supper.
Of course.
Yes. And then the Ascension. And then the most important thing, Nimrod was a hunter. You got to bring that in every sermon to see if the people believe the Bible.
Nimrod. You know, that's, I don't know if you've, have you ever noticed how that name gets kind of be, it kind of has a derogatory tone to it.
Oh, it definitely, well, because.
You know, I've heard people call you Nimrod, you know, that.
Well, you know why?
Why?
Because he was the leader at the time in Shinar when they built the Tower of Babel. And the word Nimrod means go down. It really does. And he was saying, forget about God up high. Let's go down to earth, and we'll build a tower to make a name for ourselves.
Uh-huh.
Nimrod was the main individual. In fact, there's going to be, I talked about it yesterday, that's why I'm somewhat familiar with it, Pentecost, the reading is the Tower of
Babel. Yes.
So I talked about it yesterday, and now my good friend Joel Heck is coming on in a couple of hours on Issues, Etc. to talk about the Tower of Babel.
Joel Heck, he was here 30 years ago.
Yes, in fact, I just bought 20 of his books on creation.
Uh-huh.
He had done a five-part series on Issues, Etc., and it's just an excellent book. Very, very good to show that creationism is more scientific than evolution, in fact.
Well,
I'm talking about scientific, not, you know, you need the Bible, you know. And so it's an excellent book, and they had some excellent with Todd on there. But I think more and more people are starting to recognize things. I think this Gosnell thing,
yes,
is going to be very good for us in the sense that people just didn't realize what an abortion is.
That's exactly right.
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you. You know, you can't have it both ways. It's either, you know, it's either the terrible death of a child or it isn't. You know, you. We, of course, believe it is.
Yes.
I mean, it's murder.
Well, in, what does David say? In sin did my mother
conceive me.
Yes. Now.
We were conceived in sin.
That's right.
You have to be a human being to be conceived in sin.
Yeah. In other words, the sin he was talking about was his own.
Right.
Not his mother's.
No.
Because the sin with David and Bathsheba had occurred prior to that. And that child died. But it's really very unfortunate that people are so caught up in evolution. I think that's really part of the problem with evolution. And when you're talking about evolution, there really ought not be any ethics. It's survival of the fittest.
You're right. Yeah.
And
dog
so,
eat dog.
Yeah. Anybody arguing against anything, you know, they're on really shaky ground if they don't believe in God. And you can't believe in evolution and in God. Because the God, the true God, says he did everything in 6 24-hour days. And the Bible is his word. That's his
right.
interpretation of how it happened. And evolution, of course, they got tons of death prior to the coming of Adam and Eve in the form of two monkeys, as I was taught at the seminary. Yeah, that's in fact, just speaking about when I was taught at the seminary, sermons really weren't focused on Christ many a time. For example, I remember when we were enthusiastically cajoled to go downtown and take part in the garbage strike that was going on so they could get higher wages. And we were told specifically, make sure you wear your collar.
Now, this is the before the Seminex walkout, of course.
Well, people don't know what you're talking about, but
right.
It was before the liberals left the seminary. So. And I went through the same at that time.
Mm-hmm.
There was only a handful of us students who really believed the Word of God. Many of them left with that faculty. But be that as it may, there was, on some of them, you know, there was a big emphasis on Jesus, the cross, justification. But for many a time, the Bible was seen as a way of social justice, especially the prophets. That's how I was taught the prophets, Amos and all those. So, we can't believe, I was talking to, you know, Dr. James Veltz.
Yes.
And he was talking about why this seminary is so good. And it would really kind of surprise me what he said, but it really made sense. He goes around the country, and the world, in fact, to theological debates and theological seminars. And you know what he finds that these great theologians don't really examine very closely is the grammar of the Bible. They don't examine okay. grammar. And so remember that teaching in Sunday school about the man, the demons went into him?
Yes.
There are, I think he said, 6 errors in the English. Because they don't look at the grammar.
Because they don't look at the grammar of the Greek anymore.
Yeah, no. For example, they didn't go into a lake. The word used is sea, which is kind of interesting because remember in Revelation, at the end of the world, for the believers, the sea is no more.
Right.
Because that's the abode of Satan. And it was just item after item there where the English totally mislead you, because people don't know grammar anymore, especially tenses. The most important one I heard from him recently, and I've used this, when the angel's at the tomb, he says to the women, you are seeking Jesus of Nazareth who was crucified. Well, it just so happens that who was crucified is every translation. It's a past. But in the Greek, it's a present. Who is crucified? And the way I like explaining it, if you were walking down the street with your father and somebody came up to you and said, well, who's this gentleman with you? You wouldn't say, he was my father. You'd say,
he is.
He is, because the relationship is still going on. So to say that you're looking for Jesus who was crucified as though it is some past event with no ongoing benefits, he is the crucified one.
Crucified, right.
Which means he's still delivering all the benefits to those who trust in him. It's a huge difference, and the English misses it entirely. And it was example after example. In fact, what happened to the pigs?
The pigs ran down the side of the cliff and were drowned.
Yeah. Two things wrong with that. Now, see, I would have said the same thing you did Mark,
okay,
because I thought that was what happened. They weren't on the mountain or on the cliff when they got there, because it was a very steep cliff. They couldn't have stayed. They were near, the Greek says. And when the demons went into them, then they ran to it and, of course, went right down. And the word isn't drown. It's they lost their breath, which is kind of important with the demons inside them. There was no more life. It's more probably by drowning, no doubt about it. But the fact is, that's not what the Greek says. They lost their breath. And so there are just so many things when you have a grammarian who understands the difference between an aorist and an imperfect in the Greek, and you know how many times we studied those things. So it really, really makes a huge difference. In fact, in the Hebrew, going over this Tower of Babel, it says that Nimrod was a mighty man. That same word mighty is used for the word material. Yeah. And he was the one that got people looking at the materialistic view of the world. Very, very interesting in the Hebrew. And most of them don't translate it properly also there. So
materialism had kind of an early beginning.
That's right. Really early.
Goes back to Nimrod.
Goes back to Nimrod. That's why he has a negative name on it. And he was king of Shinar. And so it never says that he himself built the tower. But being king there, everybody just assumes that, of course, that's where he would have been involved. And especially with the way that his name is, you know, in Hebrew, every name has meaning. And to get down, you know, means not to look up and get down to the ground. So we're living in a society right now. You already mentioned that first problem. But we have in front of us another article from the Post-Dispatch about how a black pastor in Chicago was getting his people to phone everybody who he could in order to stop gay marriage. Because he says, we're a congregation who abides by what the Bible teaches, and the Bible teaches one man and one woman. His name is Reverend Rick Jackson, and he's of the Greater St. Luke AME Church in East St. Louis. And so the article tries and shows that many, many black people in these conservative churches, they may be liberal on some other political notions, but when it comes to this, they're pretty solid. And this, what do they say? Bedfellows are made? How's that saying go? Depending on the issue, you have different set of...
My enemy is... Let's see.
Yeah, I know the one you're thinking of, too.
Maybe that's not what you're thinking.
No, but in other words, let me explain it this way. When we were at the SAM, our bedfellows were the Southern Baptist and the Conservative Presbyterians against the historical critical right. method that denied almost all a lot of the history of the Bible. Then during the worship wars, which still to some degree are going on, you have the High Church Episcopalians and the Roman Catholics who are kind of our friends. But now we're moving into an area, and things are really getting heated with the moral issues. There will be joined probably with the Roman Catholic.
And the Southern Baptist.
Southern Baptist, right, and Conservative Presbyterians. But it's going to be very interesting on this gay marriage that what needs to be done is to show that anytime you go contrary to the Word of God, certain consequences kick in. And you see that in your congregation all the time with your members. You know.
Oh, yes.
When's the last time adultery led to happy results?
Right.
You know, it's ridiculous.
Or drunkenness.
Yeah, alcoholism or drugs.
Right.
Yeah, I've just never, fortunately, ever, you know, even been enticed by even smoking, let alone drugs. But why are people like that when they see?
I do not know. I can't understand it.
No.
I mean, I have a hard enough time doing without chocolate. I mean, you know, I don't need anything else to be hooked on. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes.
I mean, I don't know why they want to get involved in that stuff, and they know it's habit forming.
And they know it's going to cost them money. And in fact, the Tower of Babel tells us, because what did they want to do? They wanted to get high by themselves.
Yeah.
So they wanted to erect the tower
to
the heavens.
Themselves.
Yes. And drugs is a way of doing that. That's why the individual I was studying talked about, that's why we talk about when people get high, it's on the basis of an addiction and a materialism. That's what you get high on. And you know, I notice that in myself, for example. Like, I'm ready to go to bed. I'm not quite tired. I got to read something. What should I read? Or if I read theology, I'll stay up all night thinking about it. And then I'm suddenly reminded that today was the day that the Best Buy circuit came out in the Office Depot. So I take that and... for months, I have been looking for another monitor, and Best Buy had one. And now in front of my computer, I have three monitors. Not just two, but three. I tell you, once you use two, you never go back to one. You just feel... But three, I just put up...
Oh, Tom, you've always got to have your toys.
Okay. Oh, I love toys. I love toys, and I can see why people would... And I'm just wondering, you and I are fortunate that our materialistic desires are in those areas rather than in drugs.
They're not in my, those are not my areas either.
Well, no, not for...
But they're not in drugs, too.
No. Yeah, what's yours? Walking?
Oh, I like history.
Oh, you like history.
Yeah.
Oh, Civil War,
yeah.
That's
you can
right.
get me, I'll tell you, if I know there's a Civil War artifact shop somewhere, oh boy, there I'm hooked.
Really?
Yeah, I'm really into Civil War.
Boy, history, I like history theology, but history in and of itself, you're bound to need to read the history so you don't make the same mistakes.
Right.
You know, that's really a good point, but... Outside of that, the trouble is, I was watching a program last night, and they were going to rob an office, and the one person said to the other, you know something's going to go wrong, and you don't have any way of escape. And sure enough, something did go wrong, and they all got caught. But it was kind of funny.
You can't win. You're not. You can run, but you can't hide from
yeah.
the law. You're going to get. You'll get caught sooner or later.
Yeah.
This day and age of technology, they'll catch you. It's stacked against you. There's just no way you're going to get away.
Yeah. In fact, they were going into a building that had 40 guards on every and cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
And they thought they were going to be okay. But it was just, well, I won't say any more about the movie because it was a pretty good ending. Be that as it may, it's kind of interesting that the church is going to be really up and against these, and we're going to need the lay people. because they're the ones who are bringing their children up properly or improperly. And a lot of them just don't teach their children the right things. They just don't. Yeah, I was hearing a story about my my grandson. He was kind of a captain of a baseball team.
Kind of a captain of a baseball
team. Well, you know, at his age, you know.
I understand.
And so he was putting people on various. And then everybody had a position but this one little girl.
Oh.
She was all by herself. Uh-huh. And he went over to her, and then he helped her put on her glove and took her out to where she was supposed to stand and this sort of thing. And, of course, Mom and Dad just thought that was so wonderful,
yeah,
you know,
because
he doesn't do that with his sister at all. Yeah, they actually take karate.
Your grandkids?
Yeah.
Take karate?
Yeah, so every time we go over, they're now on their fourth belt.
Wow.
And it's really amazing. I didn't know how do you teach karate, but there are hand movements and foot movements, and at the one belt, there's like, you got to learn 15. Then at the next belt, there may be 20, but they're totally different than the other before. And the way you get to a black belt, it's like 12 belts up. You have to know all of them by memory. And so when they say something, in fact, the one granddaughter, actually, I think it's, yeah, Korean. She can count to 20 in Korean because you have to do these things in Korean. So it's kind of... I told the dad, I think that was the worst thing you got them doing because pretty soon he's going to be as tall as you. Then what are you going to do? Yeah. But getting back to this, how often do you preach on ethical issues in the church in regard to what's going on in society?
It comes up. Certainly, it comes up from time to time in my messages. But, you know, our purpose is not to, you know, we waste time condemning the people outside of the church. Our purpose is, as preachers is to help ourselves see that we're sinners too. We're poor, miserable sinners lost without Christ.
Yeah.
So we've got to bring it around to us and show us where our, you know, show us the mirror of the law for our own sins, let alone the world outside of the church.
What I see in doing that, and it's someone also in the Bible class, you're giving them arguments to show how what people are saying to stand by something that's contrary to the will of God, that makes no sense at all. For example, there are some black senators, I guess, in Chicago that they're embracing same-sex marriage on grounds of tolerance and civil rights rather than on biblical grounds. In fact, one says, the country will abide by the standard of government. The church has to abide by the rule of the Lord, which is a good point. But this is not a civil issue. For example, if somebody is a child molester, are we now going to tolerate that and respect his civil rights to do what he wishes? You know, it's just getting...
Well, that's it. Well, I mean, that's the slippery slope we're talking about.
Yes, and it's more than a slippery slope.
If somebody wants to marry their dog or their cat,
yeah.
I mean, are we going to allow that?
Or even their daughter.
Yeah.
Because it says, as long as you love each other, then marriage should be okay for everybody. But one, I think it was a lesbian in Australia that came out with an article. The whole purpose of this gay marriage is actually to destroy marriage. Because she thinks it's a horrible evolutionary thing that came about and is not necessary at all. So when you go to like Switzerland, hardly anybody gets married there. They just live with each other and then they move on to somebody else and this sort of thing. And who gets hurt?
The kids.
That's right. Yeah.
And society in general.
Yes. Were you surprised with the verdict where the abortion doctor ended up being actually found guilty of murder?
No, I wasn't. I thought it was too obvious that I thought he would be convicted. I don't know if it was quite to the degree that I expected, but...
Yeah, I was surprised.
Were you surprised you thought that he'd be let off?
Pretty soon, yeah, pretty
really?
Well. Because what's the difference just because they pass through, 16-inch thickness of skin?
Yeah.
That all of a sudden, that's murder, but... Before they get born, that's not murder. And you're doing the same thing.
Right. Well, so, it does show the inconsistency there.
Yeah, it really does. So I think we as Christians really need to be getting prepared for the coming, because with the kind of administration up there that is so liberal in the ethical areas, there's no doubt that we're going to have to be, as a church, stronger more and more. And I see persecution coming, if not the IRS running after you.
Oh, yes.
Then newspapers and this sort of thing, and mocking you and this sort of thing. But that's what Jesus says happens when you stand up for his word. So,
well, you know how we're already criticized if we don't marry couples that are living together.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just a matter of time before we criticize for not marrying same-sex couples.
Speaking of a matter of time.
We're out of time.
And your services are?
9 o'clock Sunday morning, followed by the Bible class hour.
Okay, well, we're going to be
Saturday at 5.
Doing tomorrow, we're going to talk about the missionary generation, the lost generation, the greatest generation, the silent generation, the baby boomers, Generation X, and millennials. That's all the generations since 1860. We're going to explain them and see how the church might work with them. I'm Tom Baker. Till tomorrow. And Mark Smith, God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel on KFUO Radio. You can write Pastor Tom at KFUO Radio, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. Or email lawgospel@lawgospel.com. Law and Gospel is archived for your listening convenience at KFUO.org.